Back together, you and I, for a busy edition of Connecticut Today, Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. Dr. Sarah Crawford, biology professor at Southern Connecticut State University, stopped by to update us on the coronavirus, the vaccination progress, and the so-called Delta variant. We had a couple of guests on regarding the recent legalization of recreational marijuana in Connecticut. Colton Grace joined us from the organization Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and the Reverend Carl McCluster joined us. He, the leader of the Shiloh Baptist Church in Bridgeport, the Reverend McCluster out front among faith leaders opposing recreational marijuana. And I also had some thoughts regarding the recreational marijuana situation as to why legislators, at least this time around, didn't listen to the doctors and or the health experts. Why don't we listen to the doctors? Why don't we listen to the medical professionals on marijuana? Why didn't we do that? And again, you may not want to, you may not care, you may think that getting recreational marijuana passed was too big of a deal for you personally or money-wise, that's fine. So maybe I should ask this of our lawmakers in the Democratic majority. Why didn't we listen to the doctors? We love to listen to doctors when we're lawmaking, when it comes to things like vaping, although it turns out in the end we didn't go with the vaping suggestions they made either. When it comes to vaping, when it comes to salt, when it comes to fast food, when it comes to childhood obesity, I mean, you got guys and gals all over, not just in Hartford, but all over the place, in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, down County Way. Oh, but look at what the medical professionals are telling us. Okay, well, the medical professionals kept telling you folks in Hartford, in the State House, and in the State Senate, on the Democratic side, don't approve recreational marijuana. It's not a good idea. So why did you do it? Why is health important some of the time and not all the time? The Connecticut State Medical Society is deeply disappointed that legislation allowing the recreational use of marijuana is being signed into law by Governor Ned Lamont. Physicians base their opinions on science, data from peer-reviewed writings, observations, and patient interaction, which is why we believe the recreational use of marijuana is bad science, bad policy, and dangerous to Connecticut's public health. That the statement, part of the statement, from Dr. Gregory Shangold, who heads the Connecticut State Medical Society. So you tell me. I got open lines here. I'm willing to entertain anybody on this discussion. On the day that Governor Lamont signed this bill, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, why didn't we listen to the doctors this time around? Why didn't we? Why didn't we? Quoting again, throughout this debate, we have worked to inform Connecticut's policymakers about the health and social ramifications of legalized marijuana, urging them not to ignore the harmful, even devastating effects that this measure will have, especially on our younger populations. The signing of this public act, together with the failure of our legislature to ban flavored tobacco products, leaves tens of thousands of children, adolescents, and young adults at risk in our state. The statement continues, CSMS physicians support and recognize the need for decriminalization efforts and reduced penalties for cannabis offenses, as we've seen wide racial disparities related to convictions for marijuana possession. We are committed to and believe that there are more effective ways we can combat racial disparities other than this approach. Yet we cannot support the dramatic change in public policy that recreational use of cannabis will bring. Well said. The final graph says, going forward, legislators must focus on appropriating state funds to the necessary prevention resources for the inevitable long-term effects that will arise, such as detrimental impacts on mental health, brain health, and the health consequences of driving while impaired. We look forward to working with the Connecticut General Assembly and the executive branch to address these concerns that will arise. So there you go. And Dr. Shangold will be a guest tomorrow here on this program. Write it down. He'll be with us starting a little over 24 hours from now at 3:30. So I don't quite understand it, kids. Maybe you can spell it out for me. I think money may have to do with it, but why all of a sudden do we not listen to doctors in this situation? See, this shows how spineless and feckless a lot of our lawmakers are. Because on one hand, they'll trot out this and that and say, well, we want to make Connecticut. How about all these bills that come out? Well, we want to make Connecticut a healthier place for our kids and our families. Whenever it comes to tobacco or vaping, and you get out the handkerchief and you start sobbing, oh, I'll vote for anything. This is just wonderful. Kind of interesting how you didn't hear the Democratic majority in Hartford cite medical research, did you? Well, of course you didn't, because this is all about money. I don't care how many times anybody in Hartford says whatever they say to justify it. It's about money, and it's about reparations. And not only is it about money, it's eventually about a flow of money to just go into selected parts of Connecticut, which I'm okay with if you just admit it. If you just admit it up front. And why am I saying that? Because according to figures published this week in the Hartford Current and other places, you know, there's only one year, the year after next, one fiscal year where the retail marijuana tax money goes into the general fund. And the general fund, hence the word general, is there to benefit the entire state of Connecticut, all 169 cities and towns. So it's almost like the way the bill was written here. It's like, okay, take your general fund money for 1 year, and then maybe everybody can shut up. Because then it's, you know, starting in the two out years after that, the majority of the money goes basically to the cities and the equity fund and all that. So, you know, I hope a lot of you folks who still call me and used to call me on things like this and say, well, no, come on, we need the tax. I mean, I see it on our Facebook strings that we have on my social media. Oh, tax, just tax it. Tax it. It's going to be great. Tax it. Well, not here. It's not going to be great unless, you know, they publish false numbers here. You know, it's don't look for this thing to be great for all the 169 cities and towns. It's going to help certain number of cities here and there, because every time people, you know, buy their weed, it's going to end up. And come on, let's face something here. And I'm saying this only because I'm 60 years old and I've been keeping an eye on this stuff for about 45, 50 years now, when I became kind of, you know, back when I was 10 or 15 and, you know, became cognizant of what was going on in some of our cities. How many hundreds of millions of dollars have we already pumped into cities in this state? And how much, I don't care where it's from, gambling, the lottery, now pot. What changes? And look, I'm not trying to be dour or dire here. What changes? You tell me, since the whole Great Society thing started in the late 60s and early 70s, go ahead, you tell me. What really has improved steadily over those decades in Bridgeport, in Hartford, in New Haven, in Waterbury, in Norwalk, in Stamford, certain parts of the cities. What has improved? And now we're going to try something else. Oh, you remember when the lottery came in 72? Oh, we're going to have the best educated kids in the country. Oh, my God. That money tree lottery, that's gonna solve all of our problems. How'd that work out? How much are these cities and other municipalities spending year after year with some of the results that they're getting? You know, maybe it's not the money. Maybe it's something else. Heard a couple of comments from Dr. Anthony Fauci sounding quite concerned about this Delta variant. We've been talking about it here. Melissa's been talking about it. In the morning, I wanted to go to one of my go-to folks again to kind of give us an update on this and maybe explain this to folks who should be concerned or maybe not. We welcome back for another appearance here, Professor of Biology, Dr. Sarah Crawford from Southern Connecticut State University. Dr. Crawford, how are you?
I'm doing well. As a matter of fact, I'm back in the lab today.
Oh, that must be your happy place.
It is, especially since I was away for about over a year, and I feel like Rip Van Winkle, you know, coming back and finding everything as it was. It's wonderful. So I'm very happy to be back and getting started up again.
Well, that's great. I don't know whether you heard, Doctor, when you were on hold there, the remarks of Dr. Anthony Fauci, who sounded as opposed to his general optimism over the past couple of months, Dr. Crawford, he sounded very concerned about this Delta variant of COVID. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I share his concern. I think that ever since this first started in India, resulting in a horrific upswing in cases and deaths in that country, we were at risk, obviously. And now in the UK, almost 100% of current infections are due to the Delta virus. And even though now in the United States they're saying it's about 10% due to Delta, we don't have as good testing. We don't do as much PCR testing of the virus as many other countries do. So that may be an underestimate. And also, if we had followed in the footsteps of Western Europe, and particularly the UK, they're seeing a tremendous increase in numbers and cases due to Delta. And that certainly makes sense because of the way Delta behaves. So unfortunately, in our country, we're not totally vaccinated yet. You know, we're sort of at the 50 to 60% mark. And it's not clear, you know, whether or not the remaining Americans are planning to get vaccinated. So if this virus starts to spread, it's more contagious. And it may actually be more serious. We're still evaluating that data. And this could really generate another new wave in the pandemic, which is very frightening and distressing.
Wow. Dr. Crawford, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Got to take a break here. Dr. Sarah Crawford is the guest. We've had her on numerous times in the past year and a half, Doctor of Biology, Professor of Biology at Southern Connecticut State University. More on what the deal is with this Delta strain of the coronavirus vaccine, the variant there. First, traffic and weather together right here, 3:36 on WICC. Trying to make sense of all the concern now over this Delta variant of the coronavirus vaccine, joined for another segment by Dr. Sarah Crawford, Professor of Biology at Southern Connecticut State University. So, Dr. Crawford, in this case of a mutation, when a virus like this mutates, is this a natural mutation, and or could it be a mutation in reaction to the vaccinated population? Do we know why mutations like this happen?
Okay, well, the vaccinations actually help to prevent, if they're widespread and result in some form of herd immunity, help to prevent the virus from actually mutating, because in order for the virus to mutate, it has to have a host. So what happens is the more people that are infected by a virus, then the more the virus circulates within the body and reproduces itself. And every time the virus reproduces itself, it can make a mistake that causes a mutation. And if that particular mutation allows the virus to be more successful at infecting people, which has happened several times in the genesis of these various variants, Then we have a situation where, because people are still being infected, the conditions are there so that further mutations can occur. And that's actually another worry, that if the Delta continues to circulate at fairly high levels, will there be yet another mutant that arises, which is even more serious, more deadly? So it's we really don't want to let the virus run its natural course. We want to use our technology, our vaccines, our early intervention therapeutics for people who are already infected to stem the course of this. Because if the virus can infect someone, then it can't mutate, and then we're safe.
You mentioned that it happens when a mistake, as it were, happens in the process. Are we sure this is a mistake, or do viruses like that, like this, do they adapt? Maybe is that why they change in their variants?
You're absolutely right. It is actually a form of adaptation. That's what's happening. The virus. The mutation itself sets the playing field, allowing for adaptation to occur, because it gives the virus more opportunities, or multiple opportunities, to change its genome and change its activities. So they always say mutation is the raw material of evolution. It, in and of itself, all it does is produce a change. But if that change increases the adaptability, in this case, the ability of the virus to cause new infection, then that mutation and the viruses that have it will become more prevalent within the population.
Dr. Sarah Crawford is the guest from Southern Connecticut State University. Now, Dr. Crawford, I know there are people probably listening to you and I right now saying, you know, okay, I have my vaccines, I've gotten all my shots, I have gotten the vaccine. Am I still protected or not against this Delta variant? What does the data say on that so far?
Well, the data look good so far, and it's certainly something that crosses everyone's mind, because you have this big sigh of relief once you've gotten your vaccines all, you know, done, and you're excited about reentering the world, so to speak. But then all of this happens. But the data so far show that if you've had both vaccines, in other words, if you're taking the Moderna or the Pfizer, you've had both vaccines, you're very much protected. You're about 80% protected against being infected with the new Delta virus. And of those, very few serious infections have been reported. And this is based on data in the UK, where they've been monitoring this more carefully, because it's the only virus basically circulating now in the UK. But if you have only been vaccinated once, the protection is not very good at all. It's down to about 30%. So there's the evidence that we're seeing with this new, more infectious, and potentially more serious variant is that full immunization is necessary to provide protection. That is not 100%, but certainly is very high, reasonably high, and certainly in terms of severity as well. And that's all we have to go on right now. It may become necessary in the future for booster vaccines or even variant vaccines to be developed, depending on how this plays out in the next couple of months.
And finally, Dr. Crawford, what are we seeing as far as the breakthrough rate of infections? In other words, people who have been vaccinated fully, they've been vaccinated for a while, and they still end up getting COVID. We're reading stories about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, well, there is a breakthrough rate, as you mentioned, for the non-Delta forms of the virus that were circulating previously. The breakthrough rate was very low. It was about in the 8 to 10% range. And that, in virtually all those cases, even if infection occurred, the outcome was mild, not requiring hospitalization. So the protection from the vaccine is really good. In terms of where we were up until Delta became a threat. And now, you know, it's not quite as protective against the Delta virus. And again, if Delta is allowed to spread unchecked in various parts of this country, in various parts of the world, there is the risk that further mutants will appear, the same way Delta came about, but in this case, maybe even a greater threat. So we cannot lose our vigilance at this point. We need to be careful. We need to be concerned. We need to be getting the vaccine if we haven't already had it and taking appropriate measures so that we can continue to beat this pandemic and return to the lives that we all have missed so much over this past year.
Dr. Sarah Crawford, a professor of biology at Southern Connecticut State University. Doctor, as always, we thank you for the time. We appreciate it. And we will be in touch down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
Appreciate Bye-bye. It. Thank you. Dr. Sarah Crawford there, Southern Connecticut State University. Real DPRC making national news today. We become the 19th state to legalize recreational marijuana. Hey, did you hear that? Come another week or so. You can have 1.5 ounces on you, 5 ounces in your car. Boy, nothing can go wrong here, I'm sure. I've had guests on from this group starting last year when we kind of knew this was going to happen. It's a group called Smart Approaches to Marijuana. They don't call themselves No Marijuana or Marijuana's Evil. It's Smart Approaches to Marijuana. And a spokesman, Colton Grace, joins us to talk about the news on the marijuana front, particularly as to what's happening here in Connecticut. Hey, Colton here. It's Paul at WICC. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. How are you?
Good, good. What are your thoughts on what you've heard over the past few months legalization-wide here in the country, and also what you obviously folks are keeping abreast of there at your offices, the legalization now made official today by our governor, Ned Lamont?
Right. Well, so, you know, we've been fighting in Connecticut for multiple years. I've been with SAM since about 2018. And we've been involved in Connecticut and really being able to push back on this. But I think the biggest factor that played into here was New York legalizing. I think that was a domino for the Northeast. And again, we were able to defeat that almost three years in a row as well there. But I think the industry has really got a lot of people on the line. I noted one thing in the news ahead of this was that Philip Morris is moving into Connecticut. And I think that was a little tidbit that should prove interesting because I don't know if you're aware of this, but Philip Morris is actually lobbying at the federal level to pass legalization and trying to shape any policy at the federal level so that it will benefit them, allow them to really jump in the market the way they have in Canada. And it's really freaking out some of the folks such as like Marijuana Policy Project and others that mm-hmm. actually wrote the bill there in Connecticut because they don't want to see the fruit of their labor go to big tobacco. And unfortunately, if things go the way they're going, it will, which is why we're trying to raise awareness on that.
Yeah, let's get a little bit into that, Colton. You folks, when I've had you on from Smart Approaches to Marijuana, that seems to be the big warning I've had is, hey, you can say it's going to be local all you want, but big tobacco with its market really not expanding anymore, they're sitting there licking their chops at this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's you were very concise in what you said earlier, that we're not no marijuana, you know, we're the smart approach. And we think that, you know, we're not going to sit here and say we should be locking people up. But the issue here is, you know, by signing this bill today, you have created a new for-profit commercial marijuana industry that doesn't really care about anything except profit. And that's, you know, not beneficial to health. It's not beneficial to safety. We didn't learn the lesson, it seems, when it comes to addiction industries. We haven't learned the lesson when it comes to the alcohol industry. We didn't learn the lesson with all the stuff in big tobacco. And we're repeating all of the failures when it comes to allowing this marijuana industry to just run amok.
Hang on, Colton. I'll be back with you. I want to get a couple of more things in with you. Colton Grace is the guest from Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Back with him momentarily. First, on the button at 4:36, traffic and weather together on WICC. A couple of more minutes with Colton Grace, spokesman for Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Then right after Colton, we have a gentleman hanging on who led the pushback, at least in much of the Bridgeport area, against this. Colton, you and your group and Dr. Kevin Sabat and all the people there have constantly warned about, you know, people wanting to hone in on the big dollar potential of this and then, you know, make the marijuana corporate by, you know, growing it a certain way, this and the other. The governor and legislators claim, Colton, in this state that we have a process set up here which will give at least half of the retail and growing opportunities to equity applicants. The other half will be closely scrutinized. Do you think it's good enough? Can the big corporate dogs still find their way into this somehow, Colton?
Well, look, I think that, you know, it's easy to look at something on paper and say, oh, this is going to achieve something we want. You know, back in 2019 in Illinois, taking a look at another state, the lawmakers there with their bill that was also written by the same national group that helped write this one, they said they were going to set the standard for social equity in the marijuana industry. Flash forward to today, we're looking at coming up on 2 years of legalization, and there's not a single minority-owned marijuana dispensary in the entire state of Illinois. So don't count on that. And then also, if you look at just a few weeks ago when the final form of the bill was introduced, people flipped out because they realized that one powerful entity could actually use some of the provisions in the bill to be able to, you know, game out the social equity provisions. And they had to very quickly rewrite things. You know, this was a 300-plus page bill with several hundred-page-plus amendments that was introduced and voted on within like a week and a half. So it'll be really interesting and tragic to see how many other mistakes like that were made. And then also, you know, some people really need to get to the bottom and find out how such provisions as that previous provision were written, how that got included, who was pushing for that. You know, it's things like that that are going to come out of this. And you're going to be looking back and saying, wow, we really should have probably not called a special session and voted on a bill within a few days of it being introduced and actually taken some more time and thought this through.
The website learnaboutsam.org. Run it all together, learnaboutsam.org. Spokesman Colton Grace. Colton, good to speak with you, and hopefully we can chat down the line. I'm sure we will. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it. 4:42, a couple of minutes now with a gentleman who we've had on the program here. He has done all he can, along with, you know, some other area clergy leaders in the Bridgeport area, to push back on this. Not a fan. Senior pastor at the Shiloh Baptist Church in Bridgeport, the Reverend Carl McCluster, joins me. Reverend, how are you? Good that you called in today. How you been?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing great. You know, my conscience is clear. And it will be clear as we go forward. So, you know, at some point you say it is what it is. I'm just, it's unfortunate that some of the real major questions that were being asked, there was a refusal to answer them or to really recognize the truth. I want to say thanks to Sam, to Smart Approaches to Marijuana, to Colton and the team, because they really have done a great job of providing factual information about the reality of what's happened in states like Washington and Colorado and other places where legalization occurred and promises were made and not kept. And so I'll say to the governor and his team, you asked for it, you got it. The legislators that did that, I like the very last thing you said about there'll be some revelation as we go forward about who's getting paid to say what in this. I can say that, you know, for the clergy that stood up against it and the politicians that stood up against it, we weren't getting paid to speak against it. It's interesting. We were approached by people, but we chose to stick with what we really believe was in the best interest. of the state and of our people. So I just ask two simple questions. Mm-hmm. You know, who makes the dollars and who pays the price? When you say making the dollars, this whole idea about equity in the dispensary ownership thing, the Illinois example is one example. But the reality is that even if they were all minority-owned dispensaries, that would still, the lion's share of the money, the lion's share of the money would be made by the big tobacco and big pharma and alcohol, large investors that own that part of it. That's where the real money is. And let's not mistake the kibbles and bits that they're giving out through dispensary ownership is really the lion's share of the money. And the other side of that then is who pays the price, and it is our children. It is our community, our society. When you look at Denver and see 84.9% increase in crime around the areas where the dispensaries are,
that
in and of itself is criminal. Shame on folk for falling for the okie doke on that.
And Reverend, one final thing before we go here, we have about a minute. Were you at all, Reverend McCluster, put off by the constant drone? You know, frankly, Reverend, I spoke out against it, of a lot of, you know, white suburban politicians here about how, quote unquote, this would be so good for the inner city and black communities, you know, in Bridgeport, primarily Hartford, New Haven, Waterbury. Did that bother you at all?
It bothered me that the inner city community was sold on this. You know, we had begun to deal with decriminalization at a level that was moving in the right direction, and that was held out as a false narrative and held back by those that were supporting it. So yeah, I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed that those folks that themselves stood to make money through their investments and also didn't want it in their neighborhood were willing to say, oh, this is going to help those poor minority and poor people in those cities to do better. The crime will be where we are, and the damage to children, the injury to the ability to educate. 10 seconds, if someone came to you and said, hey, listen, I'm gonna give you something. I'm gonna give something to your kids mm-hmm. that's gonna make them sick, injure their educational trajectory, and potentially harm, injure their increase their interface with law enforcement in a negative way. But you know what? I'm gonna make a whole lot of money from it, and I'm gonna give you a few dollars to deal with those medical issues, those psychological issues, and those legal issues. There's not a single right-minded parent that would say, yes, I want that. Give that to my child.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's been done.
Yeah, the key words there, Reverend, right-minded. Reverend Carl McCluster, senior pastor, Shiloh Baptist Church in Bridgeport. Reverend, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Phone lines are always open, so anytime you want to jump on, feel free. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, thanks, Paul, for everything you're doing. Keep it up.
I'll try, sir. Thank you, Reverend Carl McCluster. Okay, back to the phones after traffic and weather together in Wall Street, coming up on WICC.